The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, I'm here with online news editor David Grimm, who's here to give us a rundown of some of the recent stories from our daily news site. So Dave, in our first story, we're talking about dolphin brains.
Right. Well, Carrie, dolphins actually have the second biggest brains on the planet, at least compared to their body size. They're right below us and right above chimpanzees. And for a long time, scientists have wondered, how did they get such big brains? What sort of happened evolutionary-wise to give them such large noggins?
So how do we begin to answer that question?
Well, what the researchers did here is they actually took a genetic approach. And about 50 million years ago, the ancestor of all cetaceans, this is a group that includes dolphins and whales, began to transition from life on land to life in the water. And some of the dolphins' closest relatives at this time were groups that also include today's cows and horses, actually. And what happened when the ancestors of dolphins went back into the water, they had to evolve some pretty radical adaptations. They had to lose their limbs, they had to develop fins, and they obviously had to gain the ability to hold their breath for long periods of time. And also what researchers think happened is their brains got about three times bigger. And so to figure out sort of how this happened, the researchers in this study did some genetic analysis. They looked at the dolphin genome, they compared it to the genome of the cow and the horse and also of the dog to see, you know, these creatures with smaller brains, are there mutations that might explain why dolphins have evolved much larger brains than these other animals? Mm-hmm. And what they found was they found about 200 so mutations that seemed to have sort of swept through the dolphin genome. And the researchers were able to determine that these mutations seemed to have been advantageous. There were a number of things these genetic mutations seemed to be doing. A few of them were associated with proteins in the nervous system that help transport sugars across the blood-brain barrier, obviously something that would be important if your brain is getting bigger. Also, a protein known as microcephalin, which partly governs brain and head size. They also found changes in genes that allow neurons to form and break connections more easily, which is crucial for learning and other high cognitive functioning. So they were really seeing a lot of evidence, genetic evidence, to show that there was a lot of sort of what scientists call positive selection for genes that control not only brain size, but brain function.
And the idea is that these were necessary changes because of the changes in environment that dolphins were moving into.
Exactly, exactly. The mystery still is, why did dolphins have to evolve such big brains? You know, obviously, they had to develop fins, they had to hold their breath. That seems obvious if you're going to go into the water. But why do you need such a big brain? And that's still something that's really debated in the dolphin community. But now at least we have a better sense of how the brains got so big in the first place.
So does this tell us anything at all about our own big brains?
Well, that's a great question. In fact, actually, one of the mutations that the researchers saw in dolphins is in this gene called microcephalin, which I just mentioned, which governs head and brain size. And that's a mutation that's also been seen in humans. So it's possible that the same sort of genetic mechanisms that led to large brains in dolphins also led to large brains in us.
Very interesting. And speaking of human brains, we move into this is your brain on stress.
Right. Well, I guess one of the problems with having big brains is that we're sort of stressed out all the time. And one big question in neuroscience is there a link between stress and mood disorders? And when we say mood disorders, we mean things like depression, anxiety, bipolar, things like that. There's been some tentative clues that this is the case. Postmortem studies and brain scans have revealed that mood disorders can shrink and atrophy parts of the brain. People with mood disorders are also known to have low levels of a growth factor called BDNF, which keeps neurons healthy. And finally, people with mood disorders tend to have low activity in a gene called Neurotin, which codes for a protein that has the same name that seems to be involved in our ability to respond to new experiences. And as you can imagine, that could be something that's associated with stress. But, you know, it's still a bit unclear about, you know, what exactly is the link between stress and mood disorders.
Right. And we do know a lot about the effects of stress on the immune system and the rest of our physiology.
Exactly.
So what new sort of methods did researchers bring in here?
Well, what they did here is they sort of made rats depressed. They basically deprived them of food and play. They isolated them. They switched around their their day-night cycles, just really made these guys pretty depressed. And the way you know a rat's depressed is they don't move around a lot. And when you place them in a tub of water, normally a rat is going to try to swim and get out and save itself. But rats that are depressed just kind of sit there, just kind of depressing just to think about, actually. And so they got these rats all good and depressed. And then they were able to show that the depressed rats were showing low levels of this Neurontin gene activity. When they treated the rats with the antidepressant, the levels of Neurontin went up. The activity of the gene also went up. So that suggested that there was a link between this protein that seems to be involved in, you know, stress and new experiences with mood disorder, at least in these rodents.
So is there a possibility here for a new kind of pharmaceutical involving this?
Well, that's really the key here. And it turns out that only about 30% of people with mood disorders achieve full remission on the antidepressants that are out there right now. So doctors are really desperate for another kind of antidepressant. And what the researchers found is when they actually increased the Neurontin activity in these rats, they behaved almost exactly the same as if they had been given an antidepressant. So that is really potentially promising for trials with humans. It could suggest a whole new way to treat depression and other mood disorders, as well as, you know, reinforcing this link that there seems to be a connection between mood disorders and stress.
Great. And in our third story today, we have a change of pace to a mysterious phenomenon called fairy circles.
Fairy circles, right. Fairy circles, Carrie, are these bare patches of soil. They're about 2 to 12 meters in diameter, and they freckle grasslands everywhere from southern Angola to northern South Africa. And you can actually see a picture of what these things look like on the site. It sort of looks like you've got this field of grass, and you've got all these sort of bald pockmarks in it. And it's a really strange formation, and it's a really mysterious formation. For decades, scientists have tried to figure out what causes these things. The locals attribute them to footprints of the gods and other supernatural phenomena, which is why they're sometimes called fairy circles. This new study centers on a researcher named Walter Schnickel, who decided to visit Namibia in 2005 on vacation and saw fairy circles for the first time. And he's a biologist by training and was really just sort of taken with the whole mystery and decided that he was going to be the guy that for once and for all tried to solve what exactly these things are.
And so what were some of his initial explanations?
So initially he thought that maybe it was termites causing the fairy circles. Perhaps these insects were sort of burrowing under the grassland and then they were killing grass from underneath, and this was causing these circular formations. Termites also are known to give off gases and vapors, which he thought might be poisoning the vegetation. But when him and his wife came back to Namibia a couple years later and did some digging around the fairy circles, they didn't see any evidence of termites. They also wondered, well, maybe it's sort of a nutrient thing. Maybe these soils are missing zinc or some other essential nutrients. But when they did analysis for that, they didn't see any real difference between the type of soil that was in the fairy circles versus the type of soil that wasn't. So it really remained a big mystery for him.
Well, we've got a story about him, so he must have brought in some new technique at some point along
right.
in the process.
Well, so he went much more high-tech in this new study. He actually looked at satellite images that were collected over 4 years, and these were photos that were taken over a lot of the regions that have these fairy circles. And then he did some statistical analysis to sort of extrapolate for far more than 4 years. And what he found, which was really fascinating, is that these fairy circles seem to be alive, or at least they're very dynamic. They appear and disappear at somewhat regular intervals. He calculated that the smaller circles seemed like they arise and vanish every 24 years, while the larger fairy circles can last up to 75 years before vanishing. And so these circles have about an average lifespan of 41 years. He confirmed this by doing some further analysis at some of the national parks. It turns out people can actually buy fairy circles, sort of like how you buy a star. You can sort of have a fairy circle in your name.
Or a piece of a highway.
Exactly. And so what happens is when people buy a fairy circle, the park sort of takes photographs and records it for the people. And so Schnickel, you know, took this data and he combined it with the satellite data. And when he combined all this data together, he sort of surmises that these fairy circles have an average lifespan of about 30 to 60 years. So they appear, they last for a few decades, and then they disappear.
So do we yet understand what is actually causing this?
No, I wish I could tell you that Schnickel had actually solved the mystery of the fairy circles, but he's maybe about halfway there. At least he's showing that he's showing something about these fairy circles that we never knew before, that they're dynamic. And that could lend some clues into what is actually causing them in the first place. And he is still on the hunt. He says he's still going to dedicate his time to figuring out what caused these things. And so maybe in a few years, we'll have some sort of update.
Great. So what else have we had on the site this week?
Well, Carrie, we've got a Science Now about the diet of one of our very early ancestors and how it may have eaten a lot more like a giraffe than we do. Also a story about why supermarket tomatoes taste like cardboard. Also for Science Insider, we've got a story about how climate change science is faring in the U.S. courts. Also a story about a very controversial video that was released last week by the European Commission, ostensibly aimed at getting girls interested in science. It's sparked a lot of outrage on the web, and you can check out the video and our analysis of it on the site. And finally, for Science Live, this week's Science Live is about PhDs in the workforce. Are we training too many scientists? And next week's Science Live is about ethics in research. What's behind a rise in retractions and other unethical behavior in the scientific laboratory? So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
Great. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Carrie.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out all of our news at news.sciencemag.org, including daily stories from Science Now and science policy from Science Insider. While you're there, be sure to check out Science Live, a live chat on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.